Welcome to Walking Backwards. I'm Brad Grimmett. This week's episode is sponsored, as always, by our friends at Walter Clausen. I have to thank them for inviting me to the SOC Awards. We had a really good time, and I really wish I got to hang out with them more often. It's been a lot of fun, and of course they make good stuff and sponsor the show, so there are a lot of reasons to like them. Okay, my guest this episode is Andrew McClymont. He's a Steadicam operator based in Sydney, Australia. We chatted on my last day in Australia, and I'd been burning the candle at both ends for 2 weeks straight, so I was a bit loopy, but thanks to Andrew, we still had what turned out to be a really fun conversation. If you want to hear the bonus segments I do with each guest, you can support the show at patreon.com/walkingbackwards, and you can always contact me at walkingbackwardspodcast@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from some people around the world about how busy it's been since the strikes ended, and how affected they were. So shoot me an email and let me know. All right, enjoy the episode.
Very fortunate in my career that I've been, what I laughingly call my career, I've been able to work on some huge American films out here. And then, you know, half the time it's me and a producer and a, you know, handycam doing an interview. You know, it's like
right.
That could be the next day.
That's cool.
It's weird.
What big movies? Because when I look at your IMDb, I don't see big movies.
There's very little IMDb.
Well, you just said you've worked on a lot of... Oh, there's very little IMDb.
Yeah, I mean, of course, it's because I do, you know, I mostly get on as dailies to do stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they never count. So there
yes,
I am for, you know, for 3 weeks on Thor Love and Thunder as the kind of camera tech on the Phantom... The Moon of Shame scene, prepping all the camera gear to hand over to A and B camera on main unit. Fascinating stuff. A really interesting scene. Didn't kind of quite achieve what they thought it would achieve in the movie. Ended up being edited anyway.
Why are they shooting on a Phantom?
Well, here's the thing. If you, for the nerds amongst us all,
okay,
it's two Phantoms.
Okay,
synced. To each other, but synced to the Cream Source Vortex, which is a particular LED panel. There are 12 of them in 10 soft boxes around the studio in a ring around a circular set, which is this Moon of Shame.
Okay.
And the theory is that the gravitation of this moon, or the rotation of this moon, is like seconds rather than days or years or whatever. So they sync the camera. The camera's running at, I think, 500 frames a second. So there's a lot of light required, all that stuff. But like bullet time in The Matrix, where you've got any number of infinite frames, this is any number of infinite lighting setups within a certain time frame. So within a, you know, within, say... you're running it, you know, well over cranked. So say you've got 10 frames of 25 at, you know, 24 frames. Say you've got 10 to choose from. Each one of those 10 frames has a different lighting scenario, and you can pick any one of those that you want, or you can run it sequentially, or you can take every seventh one and run every seventh one as a 25 frame sequence. It gets very nerdy, but it was fascinating to see. And that's probably the biggest lighting setup run by the camera that I've ever seen. And that's the sort of thing. And then, yeah, the next day, it's me and a, you know, and a single panel and me putting a radio mic on
somewhere. Did you see my eyes glaze over?
Yeah, it was impressive.
I got a lot of sleep last night, but I was... Now, I get that some people, they need to know that stuff. I do not. I don't have any interest, zero interest whatsoever. I'm sure it's fun to shoot it and everything, but you're like, oh, you can pick a scene from blah, blah. I'm like, whatever.
It's like, you know, what does it tell the story? That's the thing, you know, and it kind of worked, but it kind of didn't, you know, and it ends up in the finished product. They didn't really play with it very much.
Right. It's like these people now with the virtual set things. There's like one at Disney now.
Yeah.
It's like a whole thing. And one of my assistants was like, oh, I was over there. It's fucking awesome. We're never going to have to leave a studio again. And I was like,
well, that's boring.
Like, can I set my laptop up on a desk and have little fake walls and call it a cubicle? Oh,
exactly. This is...
Come on, man.
This sounds
awful. What do you mean you never have to leave again? Oh, God.
If you want to work in an office, go and work in an office.
That's like, Mandalorian. I know they use screens and all that stuff and whatever, and it's like groundbreaking, and that's where this all coming from. And congrats to them, and good for them, and fun for them, and whatever, but sounds awful.
Yeah.
I don't want to be on a stage the whole time. I don't want to shoot in front of stages. It's one thing to do some driving stuff. That stuff makes perfect sense. It's very expensive to go driving. You have to shut roads down. You have to hire a shit ton of cops. You have to do all this stuff. Fine. But like, instead of going outside, someone has shot footage that then you're projecting all around a room instead of just going to the place and shooting in the location. And I don't watch The Mandalorian. I just know I've heard about it. Like, is it better?
I'm sure it's cheaper. Yeah, it's cheaper.
That's the only reason the studio does anything.
Production managers would love it, because there's no weather. It's all of those things. And I think in terms of what we do, which is this fascinating interface between art and technology, it's the nuance of Steadicam for mine and camera operating in general, but Steadicam is amplified.
Yeah.
It's like, why remove that kind of element from stuff unless you really need to? That's the thing. Brad is offering me more
There's not much left.
Bourbon. There's not much left on this one, so I'm going to have to have some. As a Scottish person, or a Scottish ancestry.
Okay.
We do,
You've had a
we're a different kind of whiskey. Before. Yeah, that's right. But it's always.
Do you like this one, by the way?
It's good.
I'm good.
It's different. Anyway, here we go.
So that's cool to have worked on that. I don't mean to shit on it or anything.
No.
It has nothing to do with you. It's just all this stuff. It's like so much of it gets overcomplicated. And maybe I'm a Luddite. Maybe this is all the way of the future and whatever. But like for me, the most fun parts of the job are getting out somewhere, doing something.
This is when,
You know how many cool places I've gotten to go and see?
Here you are in Sydney. That's right. Absolutely. You know, so. Yeah, totally. And that's the thing. I think because I shoot as well, I do all sorts of,
kind
of stuff. Happy accidents are my favorite thing. And they rarely happen in a studio because there's no accidents going on.
It's too controlled.
Exactly. So
the light never hits in a weird way off of that building over there.
No, no one ever
goes. It looks really fucking awesome.
That's right. Look at that.
You've been there before.
That's
quick, while the sun's right there. Get it.
There's a. Speaking of death by anecdote, as we were earlier, there's a fantastic. When I was just starting out, I went to a presentation where John Seale, who you may know, shot a couple of films. Gave a bit of a talk about Witness, called Harrison Ford number, and he was quite new to Hollywood or to the American system at that stage, and they were shooting in a big old barn somewhere in Pennsylvania or wherever it was, and he said, great, this is great, the light is perfect, look, it's just coming through those windows, get everyone in here now. And they're like, no, we're going to tent the barn and we'll light it. It's like you're on location,
Right.
You think someone probably had that idea, and he was failed to tell him, and he's the DP, and he's going, "We're not doing that. Get the camera in here now. Let's roll. This is perfect." Mr. Ford is happy to go. Let's do it. And everyone's like, "Oh my god, it looks great, but it's not how we do it. What if we need to do it again?" He was like, "We don't need to do it again. It's the light is here. Right. We're shooting it."
Everybody's so. I mean, and that's a long time ago.
Yeah,
everybody's so afraid to risk. Oh, what if we don't get it?
Exactly.
You know how many times I've been on something, it didn't get done, and somehow we managed to reshoot it?
Yeah.
Or it came out a little different than they wanted. And the next day, you just do it again, and no one's crying. Nobody's throwing a tantrum.
I think...
Right?
Yeah, you know, sometimes we forget that this is supposed to be fun.
Right.
And
right.
It's just art.
Yeah.
We're not oncologists. We're not orthopedic surgeons here. We're just
the last person who I've talked to about him a lot. This guy David Boyd, but it's reminding me of something on this movie we did. There's a shotgun blast, like right at camera, and it's dark. And then there's a dog barking in the shotgun blast, and we did this shot, and The next day, he's like, we got to do it again. It's just too overexposed. It's like, no problem. But, you know, he's willing to just like, let's just shoot it. Great, let's go.
Yeah.
And it might look rad, and once in a while it doesn't.
Yeah.
You know, but he didn't spend 4 hours, like, testing to make sure that, when, you know what I mean? It's like, totally. We shot it, like, real quick anyway. Boom, 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 done. And the next day we did the same thing. He just stopped down 2 stops or whatever it was.
Yeah.
It was great.
Off you go.
Right. So, like, there's a thing now about controlling everything. And, you know, I've been standing... Shit, a movie I did in Oklahoma. I'm standing in a barn that they've tented, and there's green screen and, you know, lights and all this stuff. And I walk outside and it's sunset. It's unbelievably gorgeous. And it's just two guys sitting in a truck. They're not even driving. But we're shooting it in there instead of out with the beautiful sunset. You know, anyway, like on an open range, like of a ranch.
It didn't occur to me then,
but it occurs to me now. Like,
yeah, it's a fascinating thing. And if you'd like another anecdote, this one has Garrett Brown in it. Is that good? Bonus
Brown content.
Oh, look, you know, who doesn't love a bit of Garrett action?
Yeah.
So I started my career with our very own government broadcaster.
Okay.
I said that career word again.
ABC.
No, that's a lie. The ABC, which was great.
Brad's keep just, talking while I sneeze.
Brad's just dealing with the plague.
It's nothing.
Yeah, he'll be fine, everyone. Anyway, it was a fantastic place to learn the craft, as if I may call it. And there's a couple of people who've gone on, people from who were there at the same time that I was. We can talk about them or not. Anyway, basically had this dual career or dual apprenticeship in narrative and then in non-narrative work. So started as a camera assistant on documentaries, but also as a second AC. I would, you know, flip between the two. Then I sort of graduated to shooting news, but I was also then first ACing on TV drama and that sort of stuff as well. When I started shooting news, and then that kind of became the thing, and I did a lot of news and current affairs, and I very much kind of developed that news and current affairs instinct of making a shot, making everything happen. You know, it's never going to happen again, and we got to get it, you know, the documentary thing. So when I came to, when I did my course with Garrett, you do the test shot, which was a fantastic thing. It's a whole very interesting story in and of itself. But Garrett's like, I see what you're trying to do here. You're letting your news, sort of, letting your news instincts get in. This is a choreographed shot. You know, he was pretty much going to say, you know, well, I don't know if you passed this test because you're going with the action, not what I wanted you to do. So anyway,
is this at the workshop?
Or? Yeah,
this okay. is like the I'm final. Like you and Garrett were working together.
Yeah, pretty much. So Garrett was overseeing.
The
big shot at the end. Yeah, okay. Absolutely. And he's like, well, you know, I don't know if I can pass you on that because look, you've gone here. I know you've gone with your instinct here, but what you really were supposed to do was come through here. This shot works, sure, but it's not what we talked about, which is interesting. You know, it's a really interesting. And I've then had to kind of work on, as a camera operator, work on my choreography and learning choreography from almost like a dance point of view and deliberately pushing my news camera instincts or documentary instincts to the side, you know. It's like, what's happening? But sometimes it's perfect, you know. Basically, it's the Bourne identity, you know.
Yeah.
If you ever.
It depends who you're working with.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely. But the interesting thing.
He's right to teach you that way because, you know, if you're constantly going off course.
Absolutely.
Number one, you're going to piss some directors off and you're going to piss some actors off. And you're going to definitely piss DPs off a lot.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, probably the gaffer that we talked about earlier as well.
Right.
All of those things. And it was a great lesson for me to learn. And when I was at the end, when they hand you, you know, Knight of the Green Screen certificate, Jerry says, be careful, Gary. Probably break your hand while he's shaking it.
Right.
You know, it was a great lesson, but also... You know, we got to talking after that and he said, look, it's a great instinct to have.
Mm-hmm.
Where is the shot? How do you make it happen? But in this world, and especially when you're on a drama set. And I'd been on plenty, you know, I'd done lots of operating at that point, but he was absolutely right. Steadicam is such a thing where you don't want to suddenly run off down there because that's 10 other people who have no idea what's going on, you know.
No, the difference is you talk about that in, like, right after you block it.
Yes. Yeah.
Instead of, okay, we're rolling. Now let me show you my ideas.
Well, welcome to Australia with the... do you have shoot rehearsals in the US?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, yeah. Okay, should we block this? No, let's just shoot it. I'm like, well, you know.
You know, there's this myth that, you know, in Hollywood, everybody gets everything they need, all the equipment they need, all the money they need, all the rehearsals they need, all the whatever they need. It's exactly the same.
Yeah, right.
You know, you've worked on $100 million budget movies or higher. You've seen that they never have any money. They never have any more time. They never can get that one more thing you need. You always have to just make it work with what you have. Doesn't matter. They could have a billion. There are going to be exceptions to this. But for the most part, they could be a $200 million movie and they've spent $199 million of it before you got there.
This is the thing.
It's like, well, we don't have any money. The fuck are you talking about? You know, but...
What planet is this?
But every show's the same. Whether you have $100 or $100 million, they've spent it all. And if they haven't spent it all, they've planned to put 20% in their pocket anyway, and they don't want to fucking spend it.
Yeah, that's right.
So...
Yeah, there was a thing here with production managers getting a bonus if they could bring stuff in under budget.
It's a thing everywhere. It's a thing everywhere.
Yeah, right.
They used to get this cut of... Especially in commercials.
Yes.
Anything under budget you'd get like 10 or 15% bonus.
Take the stuff. Yeah. It's interesting because those $100 million movies, you go, well, I need, you know, this lens, or I need, you know, an additional camera or whatever. Yeah, sure. But if you say we need another rehearsal, well, we haven't got time for that. Yeah, you know, it's hang on a second, I just got this, you know, another five Alexa minis hanging over here, you know, but we haven't got time to go again.
Right.
It's interesting. And I think the other thing, I don't, and again, I assume it's the same, but who knows, you know, the crucible, the thing that makes operators and DPs in Australia is drama series, TV drama shows.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, you get three or four takes, again, that's it, we're moving on, next thing, got to shoot the schedule. I assume,
same here.
Yeah, I assume it would be the same.
Comedies are different.
Right.
Comedies tend to do a lot of takes and they'll do a little writing in between or try alts or this and that or whatever.
And then you hear those legendary tales of, you know, of Stanley Kubrick or whoever it is, you know, any of our, you know, the current crop of auteur directors. Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to do 20 takes, you know, because I want a particular thing of performance. And that's interesting. You know, I don't think I've ever been on a show where that happens.
Yeah, well, have you noticed all the best directors have the hardest time getting money to make movies?
Yeah.
I mean, my favorite director, maybe of all time, certainly on my list, is Paul Thomas Anderson.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, he's always begging some studio, oh, can you please, Annapurna, whoever, like smaller, just please. And his movies, I think they make money over 20 years, but they don't come out and make blockbuster money.
This is the...
They also don't cost a lot.
If you're not appealing to the particular demographic...
And they also get fucking, you know, Oscars.
Yes, that's the that's the thing. You know, where does the revenue stream begin and end, and then what kicks it along? You know, it doesn't.
But you know, those studio heads, they like those people under their thumb. And you know, if you notice, so there's like this weird dichotomy, because like I heard from an AD friend of mine many, many years ago. She worked on Punch Drunk Love, which Thomas Anderson directed. And when she first met him, she thought he was her PA. She was an AD because he looked very young, and he was young. Anyway, he had them making two call sheets.
Right.
One to tell the studio what they were doing, and the second one to tell the actual crew what they were actually fucking shooting, because they were shooting the shit from last week that didn't quite go right, that he wanted another take of. But the studio said no. The movie still came in at the same budget.
Yeah, right.
They fucked around and they had to all this cloak and dagger to get it the way he wanted to shoot it. They had to lie to a lot of people to do it. And then you know, then there's all these big... You've seen some of these big, big movies. You'll see this director and all... Who is that? And I look them up, and it's like, this is a $200 million movie. I one of the franchise things or something. Maybe not as much in the last few years, but for a while there, I would see this name and go, who? And I would look, and they have like one short film to their credit. And nothing. Nothing. And I'm like... And they got a studio movie. But they're expected to bend.
Yeah, right.
Number one, they don't pay them that much. It's still a fabulous amount of money.
Yeah.
But compared to like a name person, they don't pay them that much. And then they just have their thumb on them the whole time. And they tell them, okay, we're going to hire them. Oh, you don't like it, but you like the money. We're hiring them. Anyway, moving on to something that we'll actually talk about. What color do you want, red or blue?
Yeah, right.
Green. No, there's no green. Red or blue.
I was,
you know what I mean? It's one. Yeah, I think, totally. And I'm not saying all the time, but that's my impression of what happens a lot is they find somebody kind of new that's actually talented, but that won't fight them on a bunch of shit.
Yeah, right. I mean, because
seems like,
you know, people come into, you know, even in Australia, which is, you know, 1/10 of the population. No, what are we talking? You know, 27 million as against 327 million. This giant, tiny thing, and people come and go. It's like, well, what happened to that guy? He was great. Well, you know, he rubbed someone up the wrong way, and right. Now he's, you know, working at the local hardware store or something.
Oh, you see a lot of that, do you?
Well,
a little bit,
and it's just a surprise sometimes, because especially as an operator or a DP, you come in, that's me, and I do a lot of daily stuff, so I'll come in on a show and it's like, why is that guy directing? Because he's... Sorry, everyone, but he's shit.
Mm-hmm.
And the DP is, don't say anything. And then you never, you know, how come he's doing it and not someone that you've worked with before who's struggling to, you know, to get a job or whatever, and who's great, and you know they're great, and actors.
I have
them,
a couple of director friends who did really impressive stuff. One had a major hit for one of the major studios.
Yeah, right.
Major hit. Like, nice. Biggest hit of the year.
Right.
On a small budget. Made a shitload of money. One made this little movie that he directed that did very well. Got awards. Went to some places. I don't know what his deal is. The other one has had like four things right before they were going to shoot get canceled. Like all studio stuff. And I don't understand, like... I don't get it, because I've worked on shows where like a director who, I don't know how they got the job, has no idea what he's doing. No clue.
Yeah.
Nice enough personally, whatever. No clue what he's doing. They hire him for like multiple episodes.
Yeah. It's
bring him back next year.
I just look.
And then it's the one where you're doing 15, 16 hour days.
Yeah. Right.
Every day.
Oh. Punish.
And all the other ones you're doing 10, 12 or whatever, like normal.
Yeah.
And this one's doing 15, 16, and he's walking around in circles confused the whole time. But anyway.
It's an interesting... Look, it's... I
find
there's
it a lot of political bullshit that, yeah, totally. That I'm not privy to.
Yeah, we don't get... But we're at the... You know, as a DP especially, you end up at the pointy end.
Getting bitter.
And you know, it's... Great stuff.
I'm just getting bitter as a human.
Oh, bitter. I thought you were saying I'm getting better. Well, that's nice. No, that's great. I think, you know,
I'm getting older.
We're on a long, slippery, slow decline, a spiral into bitterness and you know, grumpiness, basically.
You know, it's hard because I've been around a long time, as you have, and and I do like what I do, but it becomes harder and harder, especially after the pandemic. When we all had like such a big break, and like there's a certain amount of like, man, life doesn't have to be like such a grind all the time.
Yes.
You know what? I'll be honest. Having spent some time in Australia now and how people live, seeing how many people are at the pub at 4 or 5 in the afternoon on a Wednesday or Tuesday, having a nice time, and it's not like everything's open till 2 here. It's not super late city or anything.
Not.
But people are going out together and enjoying themselves socially. And like the pandemic, it slowed everything down so much that we ended up like it was almost like we started living at the rate of Australians.
Yeah, right.
If that makes any sense. Yeah, does totally. It make a little sense?
Yeah, totally. Absolutely.
Because I look around this city and I'm like, you have 5.5 million here? 5.5 million. You have more skyscrapers than fucking New York City.
It's a fast and international
and they're building
city.
800 more right outside my window.
That's right
now.
Exactly. They've pulled down some, you know, low-level skyscrapers to put up a higher one. Yeah. It's Sydney's a big and fast international city, you know, and the traffic is shit. And
you know, I mean, you're talking to somebody who lives in LA.
Wow.
And grew up in Orlando, Florida.
Yeah, right.
LA is a cakewalk compared to Orlando. It's one road goes everywhere there.
So. Right. Wow. You'd be loving it here then, because that's about what happens
same
here.
Thing.
But at least, you know, I don't know if it's the weather or the fact we're all descended from convicts, or you know, the fact that you know we live in a land that was originally inhabited by the world's oldest civilization. You know, 60,000 years of people just chilling out. You know, what are you doing? Ah, just hanging.
Yeah.
You know. All of these things, it's a pretty laid-back sort of place considering how busy Sydney is, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of the reason that people like shooting here, mm-hmm. because they can just chill out.
Yeah.
You know, Keanu Reeves is renowned for just hanging out during the Matrix things down at the Opera House bar, you know, and people, oh, it's Keanu, yeah, whatever.
Oh, I was down there today.
Yeah, right. You know, it's pretty cool.
You know, I was there as a kid.
Yeah, right.
The 80s, 1984. I doubt that was there then. The bar? Was the bar there?
No,
right.
Not quite.
Right.
Yeah.
So the Opera House was, for sure.
Yes.
But,
oh, yeah.
But, I mean, underneath, like in the front, underneath it's like all bar.
Yes.
And food and, I mean, hundreds of people, thousands probably.
Jazz and stuff and things and pretty
so
people.
So cool.
You know, all that sort of thing.
It was nice. I just kind of walked through and then, yeah.
You watch the sun set over the Harbour Bridge and everyone's chilling out and it's it's fun. And that's the upside. You know, there's like any other big international city. There are, you know, rubbish parts and good parts and parts that people don't go to and all that sort of thing.
Sure, of course.
But
like everywhere overall. I've gone is pretty chill, and you know, walking around, I've met all these nice people, and actually in all places, you know, my friend, my director friend actually, she was saying, oh, how's Australia, and I said she came here a couple of years ago, and I said it's great, like you know, I'm in Sydney right now. I can move to Sydney in five seconds from now, and I said I could move to Melbourne, Sydney, or Brisbane. 5 seconds from now.
Adelaide is the best, but there's nothing happens in Adelaide. But that's you know, like, you know, if there was a single head office or a film studio that did anything, that would be the perfect place. But nothing happens there. But all of those things. And I don't know what it was like for you in the pandemic, but courtesy of some fantastic political work, which was probably shouldn't go into, but we got paid to stay at home. That's the first fucking holiday I've had as a freelancer in like 20 years.
Yeah.
Great.
Paid holiday,
and people kind of got used to it for, you know, it happened for about 3 months.
See, this is what I'm talking about. Because everybody suddenly had like a little time off and like the government was giving us a little bit of money.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the unemployment, but like this essentially government, a federal aid situation.
Yes, totally.
And some people were being total morons and, you know, renting a Ferrari for 3 hours with that money. And then... And then some people were just like, you know, I'm like chilling a bit. I'm enjoying myself. I'm like, my stress level is down, even though there's a pandemic.
Yeah.
I'm at home a lot. We used to do street drinks a lot. I wanted to do them every night.
Yeah.
Some of my friends were with me. And, you know, even just two and then done, you know, or whatever, or even one.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, stand out in front of your place, watch the world go by, watch the food delivery.
Absolutely.
Idiots.
Yes.
Constant.
Yeah. Well, you know.
And you know, just stand out on the, essentially on the stoop or on the sidewalk and just, you know, the cop comes by, cheers your bourbon to him. And that's the way it was. And it was like, I don't have to worry. I don't have to stress about having to be up at 4:30. To get ready and get to work, you know, 45 minutes from here at 6:30, and then, you know what I mean, like
totally, absolutely, and it was nice. I mean, I like to
beautiful.
Work. I like working.
Yeah, I do too. And look, I don't want to sit around my whole life.
Yeah,
but I think a lot of people that open their eyes, especially like the Zoom people,
yes,
was like you know, I don't have to commute 3 hours a day, but you know, a round trip. I can be here and I can like get little stuff done I need to during the day at home.
Totally.
You know what I mean?
It was, you know, and the challenge has been to hang on to a lot of that stuff. My lovely wife is a marketing director for a big trade company. You know, it's been a battle to go, well, look, we did it in the pandemic. Right. Can we just continue that on? Because it, we actually worked better there. And fortunately, you know, the people in charge, okay, good. Yeah,
there's certain people they'll kind of allow it, especially if you're high enough up. I mean,
yeah.
A friend of mine's like a business manager for like high net, net worth individuals that never come to the office, almost never. But his bosses are old.
Yeah, right.
And they're like... we need to see you.
Yeah.
He's like, no, I was 25% more productive from home. I got more work done. I didn't have to fuck around with, like, you know, just the inner office shit. Our phones, I can talk to you at any minute because he does talk to the bosses a lot.
Yeah, right.
And I can do all that. It's no problem. And they're like, well, you have to come in at least once a week. But for him to do that, he has to, like, carry a fucking file cabinet. Because he has all of his shit.
Yeah.
So they're like, no, you have to be here at least one day. So he's like, fuck it. So he goes in.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, he doesn't have a long commute. It's probably a half hour at most for him.
Yeah, right.
But it's luxury. Like,
it's a fascinating thing. And, you know.
Obviously, we can't work from home.
No, that's
although I met some DP that was like working on Zoom for people. He was working for some, I forget where it was, a studio or a show or something, where he was literally getting on Zoom with, like, guest people, like, I think some stars and stuff.
Yeah, right.
And telling them, like, take the light that's to your left and move it further to your left than around. And do you see the thing in front of it? Put that up higher.
It sounds like when I was doing the Chris Hemsworth thing and the guy from the LA company, oh, can you just take that light and you're on? Or just move the camera like 5 millimeters or in, you know, half an inch to your left.
Sure. Was he telling Chris this?
No, just telling the crew. You know, it's like, wow. It's like some people, I think, like to have control, whatever it may be. And so Zoom kind of makes that easy in some ways because it's not like you're there in person as we are now.
Well, they were sending people kits.
Yeah, right.
But then just essentially he was telling people, like, he was like the technical advisor. He's like, yeah, you see that thing there? That attaches to that. Oh, okay. Now just put it on the stand over to your left. Oh, like this part. Yeah, yeah. And then turn that knob. Okay, good. Now sit in the seat. Okay, it's not aimed at you. It's aimed at the wall. Okay, so spin the head around so that it's aimed like in the direction of where your chair is. Oh, okay. And they would aim the thing. And then he'd say, okay, move it, you know, just so they looked all right.
It sounds like when, you know, both the pilots have eaten the fish and someone from the plane has to land it.
Has to land the plane for them. But, you know, if you're, look, a lot of these big stars are really smart. They always know what's going on. They probably didn't need a lot of help.
Yeah, totally.
But there's going to be one or two. There's going to be people who come in there. Oh, they just were in their first movie and it's a big hit. And then now they're here and they're like, what do you mean? What's a ring light? I don't know. I was so jealous of this guy. I used to play poker. We were playing poker online like crazy during the pandemic.
Yeah, nice.
And I was very jealous of him. But anyway. it's when no one was working either.
Yeah,
it's like the only shows going were like the late night interview shows, and they were all doing it through Zoom.
It was,
you know,
yeah, right.
So
it was really interesting. I bring this up because I know he's, I know you don't hate Dave Comedies.
Can't stand him.
Can't stand. What a horrible person. That was a fantastic. Because he was on an A-list show during the pandemic, I believe, that started shooting, or one of the first ones back, and he was posting the protocol of what they were doing. This is terrible. Terrible thing here. Yeah, right.
They were alone at Warner Brothers.
But he was posting the protocol of, right, well, we're doing this, we're getting daily tested, and blah, blah, blah. And it was great because I would go to people and go, well, these guys are shooting a fucking A-list movie. We can do it, you know, you just need to do this, this, and this. You know, we get your eye shields or whatever and stuff on the camera and, you know, Steadicam walks behind a bit of Perspex or whatever it is. So
Just like anything.
Like the door tag that's rubbish on hotels, you know.
Right, I know. We walked in the room and my stupid privacy door thing had shut in the door.
Yeah.
I mean, it's meant to hang on the thing. Now, three different times I've come out and it's been on the floor.
Yeah. It's like,
it just can't even manage. It can't hang on just long enough for the door to shut, which is not a slammer. It shuts very slow.
Exactly.
And it just cannot, because it's engineered within an inch of a fucking sliver to be the worst absolute thing possible and falls off every time. Luckily, when I came to get you, it was slammed into the door. So it didn't fall off.
And
somehow.
Yet, here we are in an industry that specializes in solutions, essentially.
But the rooms doubled during, the pandemic.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
everything
costs
fucking more.
Yeah. That's right. And here we are again. Everyone's charging more.
Yeah.
But
so my point was the money thing is, like, the show I'm on now. We just have a couple. I'll go back and do the last couple of episodes, and we're still testing.
Yeah, right.
We're testing ourselves. They don't pay us for it, but they require that we test from home. They claim they don't require that, but every email says test before you come in, period, or exclamation point. But I'm like, but if we test at home, we have to be paid for that. It's my time.
Yeah.
Well, we don't require it.
Right.
We just demand
it. Yeah.
With an exclamation point. But anyway, whatever. It's all this bullshit. But it's like when they found out how much it costs to do all the testing and have a nurse and whatever, especially once the science started to come in and they didn't want to change their shit anyway. It's like the science came in and we realized, okay, so we're getting a handle on this. It's not as indiscriminate as we thought. It's older people and it's people with pretty bad comorbidities.
Yeah.
Obviously, it can make you sick, but really, in general, that's who it's killing. I shouldn't speak out of turn, but I think the average age of death in the U.S. is older than the average age just in general of death.
Yeah, right.
In the U.S.
Yeah.
So, now, I'm not saying we didn't need to be careful and take caution, especially with something that's novel and we didn't know about. But as the science comes in, remember everybody kept saying, follow the science, follow the science, follow the science. At a certain point, the science was like, no, no, you're good. You're okay. You don't have to be so crazy.
Yeah.
Totally. And they were like, no, crazy is what we do. Like, we're just going to keep down the path. The science is going to veer off. And it's frustrating because it's like everybody hates wearing them for an hour.
Yeah.
Yes.
And imagine,
KN95 required. We were all required to be vaccinated and boosted. I have no problem with that. Great. And we all did it.
Totally.
And we still wear masks.
Yeah. It's a fascinating. It was a fascinating period.
We're off mask now, thank God.
Well, yeah.
I mean, it's fucking what is it? March of 2023.
Yes.
We're 3 years later.
Yeah.
We're 3 years later.
And
we're a couple of months into no mask.
It's
unbelievable.
I think the last I did a show that finished in September last year, and that was all masked up.
Oh yeah.
And daily testing and all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Then it turned into every 3 days, but it's it was a thing. And look, I get it, and I totally as long as someone is happy to pay for it, then fine. I'll do whatever you like.
No, I don't mind being tested and all that. It's just the mask I mind.
Yeah, the mask.
The KN9. I have a big ass head.
You
can see these earphones barely fit on. They're stretched to their limit right
Brad's
now.
Brad's got a huge head.
So imagine a KN95 that there's regular size, and then they make a small. The regular size, my ears are trying to rip off my head like I'm a college wrestler.
Oh, this was the thing. That's all. I'm sure everyone had a thing, but that bit of sensitive skin behind your ears would just got nailed
murdered.
After a while. Yeah.
Murdered.
Yes, murdered to death.
Finally, exactly. A couple of people on my show realized if we took a cloth mask, you rip the ear things off the KN95, you put it inside the cloth. The KN95 is on your face. It's not as hardcore.
Yeah.
So it's not doing everything it was supposed to. But I've spoken to a nurse about it. My close friend's a nurse, and he said, no, you're still breathing through it. You're getting what it's supposed to do for the most part.
Yeah, and
because the biggest part is that stuff doesn't spray out.
Exactly.
Which
exactly.
It can't spray out with that thing in front of my face. So
exactly.
Then you can breathe.
It was a really interesting, I found that the whole thing very interesting from a kind of the whole science and then how that's managed and the, you know, mm-hmm. all these things that came into the film industry that say, oh, now we have to do this.
Yeah.
And we're used to those sort of protocols, you know, for a while, not so much in terms of health and safety, but it's like, okay, shut up, everyone. We're rolling. You know, it's
we're
like,
very adjustable to this stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
If and, any industry is adjustable, we are.
And it, the amazing thing was the kind of most people said, yeah, okay, fine. And then there'd be the odd person. I'm not doing that. And it's like, I believe in, you know, chemtrails.
You can't tell me what to do.
Yeah, that's right. And I'm like, dude, you work in the film industry. If you don't like it, you know, go somewhere else. It's not that hard. You know?
I had a guy come in, day play as a dolly grip. And he had big problems because he had to prove he was vaccinated.
Right.
But he refused to upload it to the website because it was his personal info. And this and that, and then, you know, and all this stuff. And it was just like, you're looking for an argument. You're just looking for an argument. And like so many people on both sides of the political spectrum now, it's like you're looking to be offended. You're looking to be angry about something. And it's like, no, let's all just be as flexible as we can and try to be reasonable with each other. Like, that's the thing. Like, you know, I'm working for a big studio corporation. They set these rules, and I think they were kind of virtue signaling. They were afraid to take the rules away, lest someone say, like, oh, they're not as liberal, or whatever. Whatever, that I don't even know.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't even know. It's like, no one, can you please free our fucking faces? And the rule was, even outside, you have to wear them.
Yeah, yeah. That was the hilarious.
Right.
Hilarious thing.
And the star of my show has a PhD in neuroscience, and knows that it's nonsense, and she's too nice to like throw a thing. But it's like, and look, we have an older person on our show. If they said to us, like, when she's around, if she's an actress, when she's around, you wear a mask, I'd be like, give it to me, happy
totally. To it, absolutely.
But because she's at risk, the rest of us aren't.
It's
and we're all or okay for the most part. Again, always exceptions.
Not about, but most of us are not.
And
about
I'm not anti-vax. I'm not anti-anything. Right. I'm just okay. So a close friend of mine was telling me he was doing a show for Netflix, big show for Netflix, and at the time Netflix rules were KN95 inside, no mask outside. Okay, fine. So and by the way, most of these rules have not existed for actors the whole time.
True. Yes.
Except maybe when the COVID coordinator shows up, or they have the COVID meeting, then they suddenly put a thing on for a minute.
Actors are special people. We know that.
Well,
this is the thing.
To be fair, on the show I do, they followed the same fucking rules.
Yeah, nice.
For the most part, for all of it, they wore them when we had to wear them outside. They wore them outside too. Right. They didn't act like they were too good or too big, because we have luckily such a beautiful cast.
Proper
but
people.
On other shows, I've seen it in between our seasons. And this particular show, he had a giant Steadicam shot. I think he said 4 or 5 minutes long. Big shot anyway. Somebody pulls up in a car out on the street. They get out. They have a conversation. Then they walk in. They walk through the house. Hey, how you doing? Hey, how you doing? Through the house, out to the back by the pool. And then they have a conversation. Then they walk and they have a conversation. So they just walked through the house. Now, my friend was wearing this mask, a KN95, the correct way, getting his ears ripped off and not being able to breathe. And after two takes, they're like, Josh, are you okay? He's like, I can't get any fucking air. I need a minute. So, he's outside. Like, so all the actors are like, Josh, oh, fuck. I didn't mean to say his name. It doesn't matter. It was my good buddy.
No one
buddy.
Will know.
It was my good buddy. No, but they're like, take the mask off. And he's like, yeah, but you don't have a COVID person staring on you waiting for you to take it off and walk in the house. Even though all the windows and doors are open, because all they do is walk through a party or whatever. And he's like, you're not the one that's going to get screamed at.
Well, that was the fascinating thing with Dave's posts was he said, look, we're working with whatever. On the crew, we have a epidemiologist. I think that's the word. It's all about the viral load, according to this guy. You know, it's like, sure, you don't want to be in a room with 10 other people without any masks on for half an hour because that's bad news. If you're just wandering through, you know, that's what that's, you know, the sort of thing that they sorted out. And it's like everything, you know, like everything in life, I find that trying to deal with the mass of everyone all at once, you know, rather than break it down into, well, you're an individual, you have this problem, or you don't, or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, we can deal with this particular situation with these criteria. Mm-hmm. But the joys of, you know...
People are afraid of nuance.
Yeah, yes. And it's
nuance matters more than anything right now.
And that's the currency that we deal in the artistic world. You know,
everything has to always be black or white. Black or white. Everybody wears a mask, nobody wears a mask.
That's exactly...
And it's like, no, the dude won't... I mean, anyway, it, you know, if they said in between takes, hey, can you put it on and whatever, fine. It's like, can you be reasonable?
Yeah.
You know, yes. I had a shot on my show, and we were out in like a jungle area. And, you know, we're exterior, daytime, and I was building the rig and I didn't have it on. Nobody's around me. Then we're doing some rehearsals. Nobody's around me. The actors are 8 feet away, whatever. And the COVID person comes over. Oh, put your mask. I guess I'd forgotten I'd pulled it down when I was building the rig or whatever. And it was just like that, because we've all been wearing them so long we forget. Yeah. And that's when the star was like, what is Warner Brothers' policy about wearing a mask outside? And he went through it, and I walked away because I was going to start to laugh.
Yeah, right.
He's a nice guy. He's just doing his job.
Yeah.
So,
but this is...
He walked away. I came back to her, and she said... I said, what did he say? And she goes, oh, he said this. You know, nothing related to science or anything, but those are the things he said. And I was like, okay, I figured as much.
Yeah.
But, you know, you have to wear one because we said so. That's what it amounts to. And it's like, you know, anyway.
I think, you know, to go back to your earlier
everybody's point. Everybody's had these struggles, and I don't want to... You can finish what you were saying, but we can probably move on from the bullshit fucking COVID mass talk.
Which is heaps of fun.
Everybody's heard enough of it.
Oh, no, I can't get enough. It's great. Let's do more of it.
That's my fault.
There's a whole sort of thing, and I don't know if it's because we're gentlemen of a certain age and life experience.
Yeah.
But just the better we get as a society with dealing with stuff that, you know, and all the information, and yeah, group manager doesn't want his, you know, personal information uploaded or whatever.
Yeah.
We have this massive amount of data, and yet we can't deal with people as individuals. Oh, hang on. Facebook can send me an ad for, I don't know, solar hot water because someone in my house Googled it, not me, but mm-hmm. now I get the ad. But we can't figure out that you can wear a mask or not because you're outside building the rig. It's fuck's sake, you know, and let's just go with starting to deal with people as individuals. You know.
And by the way, I mean, even now, we have 4 people on the COVID staff. 4.
Yeah, right. It's, you know, never...
And good for them. I don't begrudge any of them, and they're all just doing their job, whatever, but like... I don't know why we have 4.
Well, it's like parking police.
Well, they used to schedule everybody's tests because there was a nurse that would do it and all that. I mean, we had like 5 nurses working and doctors and... not doctors, but, you know, whatever, at the very beginning. Yeah. And it was like professionally done. I mean, I had someone come to my house once and do it on the sidewalk.
Nice.
But, like, now I do a rapid antigen at my table in front of my computer before getting in the shower in the morning. Or we do a lamp test. Have you done one of those yet?
No.
Oh, that's you know what? It's what they consider it a real landfill treasure. It's a giant piece of hard plastic. It takes batteries. It has lights on it.
Fantastic.
And you put a bunch of plastic in it, and then you put more plastic, and then you wait, and the batteries burn out, and it takes a half an hour. And then half the time it goes inconclusive.
You
have to take another one when you get to work.
Yeah.
But then you throw it out, and it's like throwing out like this much of a bottle's worth of just plastic. And
yeah,
shit.
Right.
Brad's and I've saved the I've saved
750
the battery. Right. Yeah. I take the batteries out because you can use it. I found out it's so crazy. It uses more than half the battery. Brand new AA's.
Two of them.
Because I used them again and it went sour. It didn't work. There weren't enough batteries left.
Yeah, right. Fantastic.
But I'm like, in one shot, you're using 2 AA batteries and all this plastic and all this shit. And I'm like, I don't... Anyway, again, we could go on.
Welcome to walking backwards into...
I know.
With masks.
Breathing heavily.
But it is interesting, and it is part of the job that we do. But to your point earlier, it's kind of... you know, so often as camera operators or artists or DPs or whatever it is, you're trying to make something new and creative,
mm-hmm.
and everyone else is trying to stop you from doing that. It's like, right. hang on a second, you know,
yeah,
and there's nuance in there that you're trying to inject into the story,
yeah.
and then you've got a COVID guy who says, well, you can't walk backwards without a mask on over there because you know, might be inside for 5 seconds. It's hilarious, really. You know,
you might see someone that might be susceptible to telling their friend about COVID.
Yeah, right? Exactly. It's
whatever. I know.
That'd be a thing.
It's so dumb. And you know what? The truth is, it's. I think a lot of their rules are for the weakest link in the chain.
This is always,
you know, the rules are for this fucking guy who's like, I refuse to upload it. And it's like, you know what, dude? Then don't work.
Yeah, totally.
Then you can't work.
Yeah.
You know, people, oh, my free speech to say Nazi or whatever. And it's like, yeah, on the street corner, you can't get a job, you know? As a matter of fact, okay. This is unrelated to the business. Let me ask you a really dumb question.
Excellent. Okay. My favorite. So I'm quite dumb, so that's good.
I've noticed. So I came back. So we, oh my God. By the way, before I even talk about this, I have to say thank you so much for coming on. And it's short notice, and with my fuckery, I've been partying and like having fun with friends and burning the candle at both ends. And I was such a nightmare mess yesterday. I barely made it to Sydney alive, and then didn't contact you until late. And then you didn't get the message, and then you showed up anyway. I was so happy. Yeah. I was so bummed that, to be honest, I thought, oh, he's had enough of me. Oh, maybe tomorrow. What about this? To maybe whatever.
It's the film industry, you know, and that's always.
I know, but I was especially flaky. I'm generally not that flaky. I generally try to set a time and then stick to it. And I wasn't sure, so I didn't. And then I was flaky. And I was like, you know what? He's realized. He's annoyed at me, and he just doesn't want to be, which would have been fine. And
not that fucker, Grimmett again.
I had a whole plan. To be on the, like on a one of the intros to the podcast to apologize to you for fucking around. And then all of a sudden you get to me, I'm at here. The Opera House, and you're like, oh hey, I just saw your message. Shit, sorry.
Yeah.
So thank you very much.
Oh, look, it's as I think I responded, you know, given my is there publicity? I'm in. That'd be great. I love this podcast.
Fantastic. Right after telling me to fuck off a lot.
Yeah, that's right. But, not that cockbag again.
He said, I understand why Baldwin hates you.
Yes. Well, you know.
Like, I know.
Well, rightly so. Yeah. This is, you know, this is what happens when, as I say, you come from a land of, from a nation full of convicts. Criminals. And criminals. Exactly. Yeah.
You're basically all criminals. I can tell.
Well.
By the way, I've never seen a more relaxed fucking cop than in Australia.
There's,
I saw two by the Opera House. I thought they were on a date.
They're great.
One was this blonde lady. Yeah. She looked like she was having a lovely, nice day. And he was he's like my height. He was tall, 6'5", 6'6". And he just looked, and the wind was blowing in his hair. He didn't look like he was going to beat the shit out of anybody or pistol whip anyone or kneel on anybody's face or anything. I was shocked.
Yes.
I was shocked. And they walked right by me. And they moved over a little bit so that I could get by. Oof. without hindering my passageway.
Yes, nice.
I was blown away.
It's
you just don't get that in the US these days.
Yeah, right. It's interesting. And there's lots of good things and bad things and whatever about police. Most of the bad things that I know about are because I like riding a motorcycle and I like kind of riding it fast. And
they
don't really. It's frowned upon, basically.
Don't appreciate that.
Yeah. But Australia has New South Wales has quite a high percentage of police compared to the population because it's, you know, a land of criminals, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But that's meant they had to go from recruiting the people that they wanted to recruit and actually take in real people and, and say, well, you know,
yeah,
you're a nice guy, but unfortunately you have to be a policeman. Oh, right. All right then, but I'll still be nice. That
right.
Sort of
when
thing.
When he says there's a high population of police, there's two for every 8 million people. I saw like four that. Today. There's fucking people everywhere. I was at the opera. I literally saw four. All on foot, two different sets of them. Two were two guys, two guy and a woman right by the opera house. I mean, couldn't have been having a nicer time.
Yeah.
And who could blame them? The sun was out. No one, you know, anyway. Well, but yeah, you like riding a motorcycle. You can ride down Melrose in L.A. doing wheelies without a license plate.
Yes.
No one will stop you.
Yeah, no, true.
No this one will, the, yeah. literally no one will chase you. No one will say anything to you and you can do it.
Once you get out of, you know, the, and Australia is basically populated around its coastline. Yeah, once you get off there, it's great.
Nobody
you
cares
do whatever you like. Yeah, that's right. You know, 250 kilometers an hour is a lot of fun, allegedly. Yeah.
Right. But, according to some friend
here. Yes, yeah, yeah.
All right, so wait, I heard two fucked up things today. Walking into the elevator when you had messaged me and I was like, shit, I'll come back to the hotel. So I'm standing out there and there's this Aussie guy talking to an Aussie, like a manager at the hotel.
Mm.
Not the big manager, maybe, you know, maybe 50 years old, something in there. And the guy was probably 32, the salesman type guy. And I'm hearing them talk. And he's saying, and we keep our word and our investors and this and that. And he's clearly trying to sell this guy. And we get on the elevator. And he says to the guy, we do 34% ROI per year, blah, blah, blah. And he says, ROI, what is that? He said, that's return on investment per year. And then that's over a 10-year period, blah, blah, blah. And I'm going, this fucking guy's selling him a Ponzi scheme. Nobody does 34% a fucking year. What are you crazy? And so this other guy that works at this hotel, this major hotel chain, says to him, it must have been in context to them, there's 10 people in this elevator. He says to him, well, the Jews trust you. That must mean something.
Holy shit. That's...
And I'm sure it was out of context for what he meant.
Yeah.
Even if what he meant was supposed to be nice, it didn't sound very nice.
No.
And the other guy goes, yeah.
Yeah.
And I was like...
Yeah.
So I almost... Like, I had this moment in the elevator. I was like, I need to tell this guy that this guy's full of shit.
Yeah.
This is a Ponzi scheme.
Oh, totally.
Oh, we've 15 years and when everyone's always got paid and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, this guy's scamming. And it's a guy at the hotel. Maybe he's fucking the hotel in this. I came this close to being like, don't listen to this guy. He's full of shit. I can tell you in 2 minutes he's full of shit. And then this guy says that and I went,
It's a...
Maybe he needs to lose his money.
You know, here we are Sydney is the financial capital of Australia, you know, it's kind of that whole...
Maybe there was something I misunderstood on that part, guy's part. It sure didn't sound like it. The second part, even he could have meant that in the best possible way, and he should not have been saying what he said.
It's been an interesting... The last kind of 10 or 15 years has been interesting with Australia and essentially this, or Sydney and this Irish background that we had, and a lot of Italian and Greek and all this sort of stuff. You know, there's been a great history in Australia of sailing close to the edge of what would be considered almost libelous as a joke. You know, it's pretty funny stuff. You know,
this was a very serious business conversation.
Yeah, but it sounds like sure you get away with that in a joke thing almost these days. Probably not, but not in a public place.
If you're funny enough, anything can be funny. Right?
Well, true.
Now, I'm not a comedian, so I need to be real careful. But comedians, they can say a lot of shit that's pretty funny. And it could be deemed offensive if you take it out of context.
Yeah,
this guy was not making a joke. He looked the guy right in the eye and said that. I was like...
And I don't know the...
Okay.
The... Like, it's a different...
He meant it as like a compliment. And it definitely wasn't.
Wow. Interesting times in which we live. Well, I think you should judge all of Australia that conversation.
Oh, I completely
do. And rightly so.
The last 2 weeks of... Every single person I met being like kind, friendly, generous with their time
assholes,
and energy.
A lot of them.
That guy.
Yeah.
He nicks the whole thing. Oh. So when you come to America and you meet, any cop or... God, I'm hard on cops right now.
No, it's fair enough.
No, you meet an asshole, you judge asshole by
that. Yeah, absolutely.
It's, not all cops are bad. I know. Nah, I know. Well, we need the police. We just need good police.
That's right. Exactly.
We just need good police.
They do provide a lot of entertainment value, and you know, we end up making shows about them. I did some day playing again on. See, I'm just.
Oh yeah, you said there were some water cops.
Wheeling this back in.
Back to you.
Did that show called Water Rats years ago now, which was fun. But just did a thing called made by Paramount Plus called Last King of the Cross, which is about, you know, essentially mafia, but not. We don't have mafia in Australia as such, but underbelly sort of kingpin. Yeah. But made with American money, and so presumably you'll see it somewhere.
Okay. You know, Paramount Plus,
good
fun.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, well, yeah. Hopefully. Good show, you know, interesting stuff. And it's that interplay between the underbelly of the, mm-hmm. you know, the crime world and police that we love so much, you know. So yeah. We need police for entertainment value. This is the thing.
You ever watch The Wire?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, totally.
You know, a good one right now that's a similar kind of, it's not cops, but it's a judge. It's called Your Honor.
Right.
Bryan Cranston.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. Nice.
Pretty good.
Look, there's so much stuff. That's the thing.
It's, I know. It's hard to watch everything.
You know.
Have you been watching The Last of Us?
No. I know. Yeah. I have, but I'm on, I have gun pointed to my head from various places going, you have to watch this show. So there's that.
I'm going
to
cock the gun.
Yeah.
It's great. It's one of the best shows on TV in quite a while, in my opinion.
Yeah, cool.
But yeah, I was going to mention, are you familiar with John Oliver?
I am indeed. And there's a story for you, if you like.
Okay, I'll do my quick little thing.
It's not much of a story.
He did a little story about Dick Wolf and the Law and Orders and stuff.
Yeah, right.
And how Dick Wolf is kind of like this pro-cop guy who, like, over time, it's almost like this propaganda.
Yeah, right.
You know? Well, and you know, the whole thing or whatever, the whole thing is always pro cop.
Yeah,
it's
right.
Always pro cop.
Yeah, very interesting.
Even when the cop does something he's not supposed to. Remember NYPD Blue?
Yes.
That was a little more edgier.
Yeah.
It's like even when they slam their face up against the brick wall and say, "I don't care, you motherfucker."
Whatever your name is, Notorious PIG. Right.
Just tell me his name.
Yeah.
You know, or whatever they scream at him and they never get in any trouble. There's no consequences. Oh, maybe the captain. Oh yeah, they chewed my ass out for that. Oh goodness gracious! Don't you bring me into this again?
'90s flashbacks. It's right. Fantastic.
They never actually get in trouble.
Right. Yeah, and true.
That John Oliver story was very, very interesting in that in that regard. But tell me your story.
It's not much of a story.
Was he okay in bed or just?
Well, yeah, there was that.
He's cheating on his wife.
Frisky, very frisky. another Australian expat friend of mine used to work in the same office, TV director guy, as John Oliver's production company, around the time.
In New York?
In New York.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
I think he was shooting one of those, you know, we're a bunch of gay guys and we'll come and make over your house. I think that's what
Queer
he was shooting. Yeah. So Mike was shooting Queer
Eye. Did you ever watch the newer version of that?
I haven't. But the original was hilarious.
So good.
Carson.
Yeah. The original was really funny. The second one is all heart.
Yeah, right.
The first one was like of its time.
Yes.
Because this was like a moment for like these gay men to kind of endear themselves to a lot of bigoted people
who
hadn't been around. And now it's like everybody's good friends with somebody.
Yeah.
Or many, many people. And so now you watch it, and it's like them getting in the lives of like people who just really need help. It's a sweet show.
Yeah, nice. Absolutely.
It's a really... I love the show now. And sadly, they cast all this shit, but the cast is just great.
Yeah.
They're like really good. And, I mean, you kind of wish they were just people off the street, but they're cast.
Yeah.
For a reason. They're great. You know,
scripted reality, as we call it in the trade.
Yeah.
So anyway... it was, you know, unfortunately at a time.
If you want to sit alone and drink bourbon, 1 in the morning after working till 11:30 when you have to get up at 8 in the morning, turn on Queer Eye with a bourbon in your hand.
Now I'm just crying into my...
So the cat will
I'll be
sit
crying,
on the lap. Yeah.
Crying into my single malt.
Crying.
Scotch whiskey.
Anyway, sorry, go on.
You know, John Oliver, yes, again, as friend, I loosely yes. call my career, is peppered with sliding door moments. Mm-hmm. So, sadly, after one of the many school shootings or massacres, I believe, in the US, John Oliver sent a crew out to Australia to talk mm-hmm. to Australians about the gun laws that got enacted here. And it's, you know, huge topic, obviously, worldwide.
Believe me, there have been quite a few Australians to remind me that we don't have guns here. You don't have to worry.
No, that's right. The police have got them.
They like telling me that. Much. Yeah.
It's pretty cool. Anyway, they were good friends with my buddy who was working there. And they said, you know any good cameramen? He said, yeah, sure. Get a hold of McClarmon. He's great. Mm-hmm. I was in the middle of a series or a show or something. Couldn't do it. Pan balled it to another mate of mine. They did this great show. It wins an Emmy. It's like...
Oh, no.
Oh, dear God. Thanks very much, you know. It's like...
Yeah, but you said no.
Well, I didn't really have a choice, you know. I was shooting some series. It's like, well, yeah, I could just take a couple of days off and work with John Oliver's crew and hope that I'll take home some bronze somewhere, but
no. You know, I take so few days off.
Yeah, all right.
This is an example of me taking days off.
Yes.
Because I actually took an episode off to come here.
Yeah, right. It's amazing.
A bit of a hiatus, and then I took an episode.
I'm running with that, he says.
Three seasons.
And do you have the same thing where you kind
50
of...
50 episodes the first days I've taken
off. Oh, nice. But, do you try and find a guy who's quite good but not as good as you to fill in for you behind you?
I let the DP know, and she hires who she likes.
Right.
And I offer, if you'd like me to get anybody, if you'd like suggestions, no, I'll find somebody. Great. Perfect.
And what if they like them more? This is always the
Right, the I know. No, it's the old... I mean, it's a whole thing in radio. Like, I've listened to so much radio over the years. It's like, never leave for more than 2 days because, you know, they might... Yeah. And I've never felt like that. I've just always felt like I agreed to do the job. These are the days. And so I show up, and I've gotten called for many things. There was one example that I talked about fairly extensively where I left a very low-budget movie with somebody, a director I liked working with a lot, to do a commercial with people who'd been hiring me for 10 years for these Tricky. Spots and paid me a lot of money.
Yeah.
And I had to leave and go do the commercial. They were paying me per day what I was getting a week on this movie.
Exactly. I love commercials, just quietly.
Right. So do I. So I had to, and the director got so pissed off, he still won't speak to me.
Right.
But it's only been 8 years. So
well, you know, early days. He'll come around, he or will. She, Any eventually. Minute. Yeah, one, of, one of these years.
No, but I normally don't take time off because... I don't want... I want to, like, do the whole job. And, you know, if my name's on the movie, I want it to be for a reason. But I think maybe the pandemic and other things, it's like, you know what? Life's too short. I had this opportunity. I told you my friend's been out here. And it's an opportunity to revisit Australia for the first time in...
Several.
Almost 40 years.
Yeah, right. That's nothing's changed. Still the same. Still full of
criminals. Exactly the same.
Yeah, absolutely.
Literally nothing's changed. That piece of gum is still in the ground outside the hotel.
It's the...
I left in 1984.
So you blokes from Sydney, is that guy still running the pub down there? That sort of thing.
Right.
The,
No, but my point is I had a chance to do it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mentioned to the DP, I got a chance. Okay.
Yeah.
Have a great time.
Yeah, nice. It's, I mean, yeah, it's all part of the matrix of, not the matrix, because we're kind of looking at, you know, out your window here. It's a bit matrixy.
It is a little matrixy.
The matrix of working in this business and, you know, doing what we do and those, you know, it's so complicated when you think about it. All those interpersonal relationships, all the people that we know and some of them whom we like and some we don't and all that stuff and who wants to work for that and how much it's going to cost, what are we going to eat next week, can I pay the mortgage or the rent or whatever, am I doing a good job, you know, will they ever employ me again after that shot where I, you know,
right,
clipped the, you know, saw the boom or clipped the clipped the light, you know, all those things. And it's, you know, if you're on a show where someone says, yeah, sure, take a day off or a week or a month or whatever, great. We'll love you when you come back. It's like,
Yeah.
Just the best thing ever.
Yeah, it's nice. It's nice. Nobody's freaking out about it. It's good.
It's good times. And you know, the joys of when everything's going right, then you kind of have to think, well, what if it's not going right later on? You know, what if there's all that's always in the back of my mind? You know?
I'm not too freaked out about that.
Wow, it's hopefully, you know, you put those things off for as long as possible. But
you know, there's certain things that that I'm like, you know, life's too short, and for the most part, I'm done working with assholes.
Yeah.
You know, I always said I won't do reality.
Except then I show up. Man,
right, bad exactly. Luck. Exactly. Then you walk through the door.
Mm.
But I didn't know going in, so that's different.
Yeah, fair enough. True.
No, now. There's just certain things, and I'm like, you know what? If I don't know what I'll do, but I'll find another way.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely.
Because it's you know, too short and too stressful, you know, so...
And
I was going to ask you, I just mentioned reality show. One show that I probably would be fun about or interested in doing that I've spoken to somebody before about, it sounds a lot more romantic than it is. Amazing Race. Did you do that? Did you do the US version? Or
no, well, we had an Australian version here.
Okay.
And again, if you want to know the story of my life, it's fantastic. It's another sliding door moment where I missed shooting the Australian version, the amazingrace.au, essentially. And that would be lots of fun. And I watched all these guys go and do the job that I was going to do. And oh, here I am. You know. And that was during COVID. So they'd be like, oh, you've got to go to, I don't know, Colombia or somewhere, or, you know, some Greek island and do nothing for a week while, you know, everyone figures out you haven't got COVID. And then we'll start shooting. Like, the logistics.
Yeah, but you
got
to sit in the hotel room.
No, they got to wander around. Oh. They got to, you know, which was, you know, and get paid. No,
fuck.
Right. Shoot them. The reason I couldn't do it, if
you had COVID the whole time.
Well, no. Let's shall we talk about, you know, my love of things with two wheels, and how much fun that is with Steadicam.
Did you crash?
I did. But not on a motorcycle. I took up BMX racing in my early 50s. Hello, everyone. I've done quite well, but I did, at one point, I overshot a jump. So, BMX, you're doing all the things.
Yeah.
And BMX is great training for Steadicam because it works your entire body and it really works the hips. So you get these fantastic hip flexors out of it.
Yeah.
Anyway.
That's weird because you're like 480 pounds, it looks like.
Yeah. Like, you know, it's...
you can really go on a BMX bike, huh?
It's all about, you know, it's essentially two races. It's out of the gate. You know, that gate drops and off you go. It's fast. You know, it's like a power lift move out of the gate.
Right.
And then it's 30 bench presses till the end of the line or a jump or whatever. Anyway, overshot a jump. I hard landed... And that was comfortable, but that's all right. I'm winning. Keep, you know, go to the end of the evening and win the race. I wake up about 2:30 in the morning in agony, get up to go and get something. My left leg doesn't work. Like, oh my God, what's going on here? Anyway, when I landed, I'd squashed a disc in my spine, essentially, but just a little part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was enough to, you know, push on that nerve and turn that whole nerve off. You can see a neurosurgeon, blah, 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 blah. It's all fun and games, MRIs, all this sort of stuff. But because I couldn't run, then I couldn't do the Amazing Race job. And I'm like, sorry, guys, can't come with you. And they're all off.
I had a floating disc at one point.
They're fun too.
Similar thing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
When I couldn't lift my toes off the ground.
Yes, that sort of stuff. Yeah.
They thought it was up here.
Right.
Yeah. Had to do the MRI, the whole thing. Yeah.
The joys of at least, I don't know what it's like in the US, but here, horror stories, at least, you know.
Oh, you have good insurance. It's
great. Well, here, anyone, you go and get an MRI.
Yeah, they take care of you.
$50 and off you go, you know.
Yeah.
And that was great. So anyway, things I've done to myself, apart from all the various, you know, broken bones and dislocated fingers and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, it's essentially kept me in good shape right up until the point that I broke bones in my left foot, which, as we all know, takes a fair bit of the load in the old steady job. Mm-hmm. So that was fun. Came back, they plated the bones in my foot. This is from another BMX crash. Mm-hmm. That was fine, recovered from that, did all the things. Then I broke the plates. They're like titanium plates, about 4 mil thick. Mm. Had to get them taken out. So anyway, here we are. And, you know, I see, just by the way, my my orthopedic surgeon says, yeah, there's... plates are quite expensive and you broke one. I'm like, you know, it's not like we can recycle them, but still. I said, oh, look, I work in the film industry, everything, you know, you just put a nought after the end of it. She said, no, these are like $4,000 worth of two plates and eight screws. Like, okay, and it cost me pretty much nothing to have them put in and taken out. You know, it's interesting.
Well, surprised it's that well in the U actually here it's $4,000.
Yeah,
in the U.S. it's $177,000 probably.
Yeah. Jesus Christ! Yeah.
You know.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
it's true.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah,
they gouge us. You know, you guys.
It's amazing.
I don't know what a common heart medication or something here. It's probably cost your government $20. They make you pay 50 cents. It's a $400 a month thing, probably, right?
I'm on a
medication. I have psoriasis.
Right.
Very lucky. If the worst thing that's ever happens to me, I'm a lucky guy. But it's pretty bad. It's almost cover my whole leg
and
my arms.
You can still punish your liver. Is that with this nice glass of bourbon here?
Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah. There's no. Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
Oh, good.
No, but they put me on a biologic.
Right.
And I have to get a shot every 2 months.
Right.
Cool. No worries. Shots don't... I mean, it's the smallest gauge. Oh. It's like a 22 or something. It's like, you don't even...
Yeah.
12,000.
Holy shit.
Now, luckily for me, not out of pocket, but when I first got on it, first, my insurance denied it.
It's
and
like,
the company that makes it...
We're having a bad relationship. We're in denial. It's like,
Right. The company that makes it, because they charge so fucking much for it, and no one will cover it, not no one, most people, and we have good insurance. I have Motion Picture Health.
Yeah, right.
Since they deny it, the company says, okay, well, you have insurance. They denied it. We'll give it to you for free. Okay, fine. All right, fine. And then there was a pandemic and no one worked for 6 months.
Yeah.
And Motion Picture Health booted me off of my health. It's a long story. They were worse than, like, some people were allowed to have 1 hour.
Right.
And early on, if you had had 5 months out of your 6 months to work and get 1 hour, and you had 1 hour, you got insurance. 4 months later, they're like, you have to have 100 hours. I had 90.
Oh.
You're off. I appealed. They just said, go fuck yourself.
It's, you know.
So my dermatologist, who were like, they can't kick you off your insurance. And I was like, they did. Well, fuck them, you know. And so they got me samples of the medication.
Right.
For as long as I needed, which was over 6 months.
Wow.
And they got me samples. And then their fee is normally $225 per visit. And they were charging me $150. Giving me a little break because they knew I didn't have it. Anyway, this is what you get amazing. Along. This is how you get along in the U.S.
Well,
if you get along at all, most people aren't lucky enough to get somebody to help them like that.
And this is the amusing thing, you know. And because you're a citizen of the United States, I now blame you for everything, and I will, you know, hold you personally responsible. Mm-hmm. But you do realize that we kind of, you know, everyone else in the world's going, what the fuck is going on with those guys? You know, it's just weird. Like that whole...
Oh, believe me, you're not the first I've heard.
Well, that whole idea that your health insurance is tied to your value as labor.
Oh, yeah.
You know, philosophically, that's a bit fucked up, really. You know, not as a citizen, not as a human being, but as your ability to contribute, you know, to the, military-industrial complex. I'm just getting my... communist on. But, yeah, at least,
you know, I play cards with a lot of people who work for the military industrial.
Yeah, right.
And most of them are really nice people.
Well, of course, exactly. But, you know, it's always funny then when
they
don't
make a lot of money, I can tell you that.
Yeah, right. Well, yes, exactly. But, you know, here we are in this strange old place at the arse end of the world, as we mentioned earlier. With
no, you mentioned on an elevator with a bunch of people.
That's they knew. They all knew that. Yeah, that's like folklore in Australia. We all know. When your prime minister says you're at the arse end of the world, you kind of have to take it seriously.
There are only four young teenage women and their mother on the elevator, so I'm sure none of them were bothered.
They would. Fine. They would be up for it. But anyway, it's land of criminals, or descendants of criminals, mm-hmm. and now, you know, this multicultural mix of people from all over the world, and yet we have this, you know, no guns and a fantastic health system.
You do.
And you go, well, come on, Americans, get on the program.
It's not just that. They're building a new 100-story skyscraper on every fucking corner in every city in this country. I mean, I've only been to three cities. Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane. Every single one of them has shit going up everywhere, and they all have this great skyline. They all have some kind of river. Brisbane has the coolest Felons Brewery.
Yeah.
Right under the fucking bridge yeah. with the purple lights on it. It's unbelievably beautiful. And it's, I don't know, how long is it? 200 yards of bar hanging over the water, directly on the water, right?
Queenslanders do like a beer.
You know what I'm talking
about.
That's
the thing. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, but I'm there on a Tuesday. This is not a joke. I'm there on a Tuesday night.
Well, it is hot. That's a thing. Here.
There's like seven restaurants in a row. And the place is, I've never seen a place so packed.
It's
on a Tuesday at 8 in the evening. And I mean, I'm not even kidding when I say it's like 200 straight yards of just like a railing with a little bar thing where you can eat and look out over the river. And it's there were three of us. We had trouble finding a place. We had to walk around for a while.
It's amazing, isn't it?
It is. But where is all this money coming from? You have 27 million people in the country. There's 5 million in Melbourne. There's 5.5 here. There's what? 2.5 in Brisbane, maybe.
Yeah, nearly three now, I think.
And everywhere I go, they're building a giant new building.
Can't get enough.
Food's not expensive compared to LA. It's reasonable. Beers are reasonable. Everything's reasonable. What the hell's going on?
Well, essentially, you know, we all live on the fertile edges of that. Yes,
I understand that, but I'm just talking about LA. We can't even pay for people's fucking health insurance, much less like have a livable city.
Well,
LA's look. I like LA, and I like my parts of LA. I like West. I live in West Hollywood. You know,
fantastic.
I like the neighborhood and everything. Go downtown, and it's like the fucking apocalypse happened in some places.
Yeah,
no, when
totally.
You have tent cities yes. of people.
Yeah, absolutely.
When you have 2,000 people living on a street in fucking tents because they can't afford rent, they're drug addicts that can't get help, they have severe mental disabilities that they can't get help for, some combo of the three maybe in a lot of cases, and a lot of them who actually work but don't make enough money to pay rent somewhere and can't find a way to build up.
People
and all those
cars,
people end up in the hospital 50 times a year because living outside, you get weird diseases, you're sleeping out and shit, you get bit by a weird bug, you get a cold, they end up in the hospital.
Homelessness
that costs
is not
us a fortune.
Healthy. Yeah, totally. It's mad, isn't
costs
it?
Costs us a fucking fortune.
It's.
I read an interesting article today co-written by Noam Chomsky. It's in the New York Times. There were like three, it's an opinion piece. So I can't attribute to any of the three of them, but which opinion was which, because they didn't determine. But
yeah.
They talked about some of the reasons we have these issues, like this specifically the homeless issue. And a lot of it is tied to unions.
Right.
The union busting that was done.
Yeah, right.
And how, you know, in the 70s, the general labor, the labor person, the person working, whether it was in a factory or wherever, was doing better and better, was doing all right, pretty good. And CEOs were kind of stagnant.
Yep.
But it's the most productive and financially profitable time as a whole in recent history
right.
in the U.S.
Yeah, interesting.
And then they told everybody, if we can get these fucking unions out of here, it'll be more money. And it's never happened. But it became this marketing thing that partially started with Reagan and other people and whatever. And but look, you know, we take We, and by we I mean most workers. Yeah. I have it better than most. And even I have complaints about, you know, I'm in a union and I wonder why I don't get better treated better. But anyway, but most people aren't in a union and they get shit all over, and you know, and then they can't get fucking health insurance.
Yeah, I know. It's intense. And we look at, you know, a relatively small nation, we look at the US and go,
right,
how to do nothing with everything. Well,
I'm not saying things are perfect here.
No,
I know they aren't.
Well,
but I just look around the parts I see, and you know, I've seen a couple of homeless people here. I have.
There'd be a few, but
there are a few.
There's not. It's not.
I've probably seen four.
Yeah, it's not overwhelming because they're, you know, people are looked after, and mental health is a thing, and all that sort of stuff.
Right.
I think. Well, there are two things. You know, sure, we all live on the coast, and there's a bit of inland stuff, but basically, we live in a gold mine. You know, and if it's not gold, it's coal or it's lithium or it's, you know, so we've dug a lot of shit up and sent it overseas, and that's made Australia quite rich.
Yeah.
The bits that we haven't, and we've, you know, grown a lot of wheat,
grown
a lot of sheep. But there's not population, you know, because who wants to live in the middle of a coal field?
But we've been doing the same shit for longer.
Yeah, but
generally more industrialized for longer. And we've been the richest country, quote unquote, in the world for a very long time.
Yes, but with a massive population.
No, I understand that.
I think philosophically, it's really, you know, from my point of view, and this is, welcome to this episode of Walking Backwards and Slightly to the Left, I think, is the, no, it's good.
No, I just
from a philosophical.
Because if you look at people here.
Yeah.
No, look, I mean, you can't let that go without me explaining why I say that. Because I'm very independent. I probably lean left, but.
Crazy not to.
But you look around, and people are happy. Like I was saying before, they're in the pubs, they're out.
Yeah.
I saw so many people getting ice cream today, whatever, having a good time. There's a cruise ship in the harbor. There's the hotels are full as shit. Everybody's happy. Everybody's friendly. Every restaurant is jam-packed every fucking night of the week. That's prosperous.
Yes,
totally. And I know there are a lot of tourists here, so some of it is that. But it's not. It does not look that way in the U.S. In certain parts of the U.S., it looks that way. In most of the U.S., it does not.
Yeah, fine, if you're on, you know, Rodeo Drive or whatever.
Right.
I think
even West Hollywood, which is a super popular place not only to go eat but to have drinks or whatever, half of our, maybe not half, 30-something percent of our restaurants closed during the pandemic.
Right, yeah.
And haven't reopened.
Right, yeah.
Right? It's struggling.
People have bounced back here. I'm very impressed.
Right.
I think it's the philosophy of, again, as we were talking about earlier, you know, treating people as individuals and, well, you figure it out, or... You know, Australia and the Prime Minister we talked about in the lift, who called this the arse end of the world, his whole idea was, okay, well, you know, I'm a left-leaning guy, but we need to encourage industry, but I'm going to bring a safety net. We need this safety net for everyone, social justice at the bottom of it all. And that was 1980s, you know, mid-80s, to early 90s. That whole philosophy of saying, okay, well, you know, Brad Grimet, he's a union guy and that's fine, but he shouldn't have to have health insurance that tied to his job. Let's make that part of the, you know, part of society's issue rather than making it a capitalist issue. Mm-hmm. I think that's, you know, you put health cover underneath everyone.
That's the funny part.
It's become
this politicized thing around the country.
Yeah, right.
And it's become like healthcare is a left thing and like anti-healthcare is a right thing. And it doesn't make any sense to me. It makes no sense. And every other Western country in the world, including Australia, all of Europe, whatever.
Yeah, Finland, both Germany, sides, you know, all that
both
stuff.
Both sides, the far right and the far left, completely agree that everyone should have health care.
And this is
That's one thing they would never argue about.
The U.S. is an anomaly in this way. And it's
they might argue about, oh, they need to be more efficient about this or that, like the ins and outs of it. But like the idea of just having it is anathema to the right wing, where the truth is a lot of their voters are rural and struggle a little more and maybe need the health care more.
I think,
you know what I mean?
Like, absolutely.
I mean, I don't want to get all, but I try not to get all political. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
It's heaps of fun. Yeah, that's...
No, it's also exhausting. Plenty of people fucking yammer on about this bullshit. So, like, nobody needs to hear me. I just literally don't understand. I literally don't... It does not make any sense.
I think you've put yourself in the position of everyone outside the US looking at it and going...
No, I know. And I've known for a long...
How does that work?
I've known this for a long time because I've done a lot of traveling in my life.
Yeah.
You know, the only continent I haven't been to is Antarctica, and...
We can fix that from here. It's not that far.
That's a fair point. Not this trip. A little chilly. I didn't bring my coat.
True. Let's fly over. It'd be great.
Oh, that would be good, actually. Long flight.
Yeah.
No, but my point is, most people haven't... who was I saying to? An Australian the other day who I was chatting with. I said, you know, the people you hear cheering America's number one, we're number one, best country in the world, best country in the world, they're the least likely to have been anywhere.
Yes.
Besides the state they were in, or maybe the fucking town they were in, or county that they were born in. And that's not always true. I love America. I think it's great in a lot of ways. But it's not perfect. Acting like it is just dumb.
Yeah.
Acting like other people don't have good ideas is just stupid.
There is no utopia. But
of course not.
We can approach it, you know, and it's far be it from us in the, you know, in the film industry. It's not like we're making this massive difference to the world, but it's, you get to see how other people do stuff and you figure out their stories.
But a lot of it, but we're realists.
Yes.
For the most part.
Yes.
We're realists. We're problem solvers. We're generally logical. So we look at an issue. It's like, I have to get my camera as jammed into that corner as I possibly fucking can at the beginning of the shot. And at the end, it has to be 4 feet out the window and I have to be on the other side of it.
Yeah.
But I can't be on the other side of it at the beginning.
No.
Because it's jammed in the corner.
Yeah, that's right.
So, and they're removing this window pane right now. I got to figure out how I can do this shot.
Yeah.
And, you know, not fuck it up and also not die at the same time. And so you find a way.
Yes.
And then oftentimes your dolly grip says, oh, well, once we did this and this worked pretty well, and then you go, oh, that's a good idea. Plus, if I do this, then that'll be great.
There's that fantastic David Attenborough. Absolutely. Fantastic David Attenborough quote about who would you want to be stuck on a desert island with? You know, and he's like, well, a cameraman, you know, because they're very inventive. They can cook and they can do everything backwards. And it's here we are. You know, that's the thing.
Never heard that quote before.
It's great. Oh, I stick it out.
That's, I love it. That's a good one.
It's just, you know, you're used to trying to make stuff happen and, you know, how can I do that in the best way? Mm-hmm. Like my sort of run-in with Garrett Brown. It's like, well, you know, letting your instinct take over. Oh, that's kind of how we're trained in some ways, mm-hmm. to make sure that, you know, something will happen on this shot that's usable, you know.
Right.
Obviously, yeah. It's, you know, there's more to it than that. But from a political point of view, you know, it's kind of, as you say, this anathema that we're so in an industry that's so used to striving for perfection in a lot of ways, mm-hmm. And figuring out how to get there. You know, how can we do that? How can that guy help? How can we get the, you know, the guy?
And we're constantly weighing time.
Yes.
Against perfection or against 95%.
Yeah, totally.
Or this or that. Or, you know, a lot of times people say, like, how much does that matter?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
No, because they want to know, like,
yeah,
am
true.
I willing to wait for that?
Yes.
Okay, because if you want that, it's fine.
Yeah.
It's 15 more minutes, but I'll do that. Do you need it? Yes, I need it. Great, no worries.
Absolutely.
Or they are telling me, like, that's an extra 15. Do you need it? Actually, I don't really need it.
Yeah,
so let's go without. Yeah, we'll save time or whatever. Whatever the thing might be.
Yeah, we can reroute that cable, but here's the time it'll take. You know,
right. Or whatever. Yeah.
Whatever
just,
it is.
Yeah. So, anyway, for me, it's just like there are generally fairly simple solutions with a little bit of ingenuity and the willingness to, like, put your heads together. And, like, you don't always agree with everybody on, like, the best way to do it. What often happens is I have an idea, the dolly grip has an idea, the DP has an idea, and maybe the assistant has an idea. And then you figure out, you take the best of all of them and the quickest, and you do it that way.
And I think you've just described government.
Proper government.
But with, you right. know, once you put money into the other. Equation right. and greed and, right. and graft right. and all that sort of stuff, well, the Dolly's Grips idea is much better because he's paying us all. It's, you know, I know. All I know. That stuff. It's the, you know, there's the, it kind of also has.
That's why we picked the right business, though. Exactly. Can you imagine me as a politician?
It'd be tremendous.
Do you know how dirty I would be?
I know, but things might get done.
I'd have a nicer room here, though.
Wow. This is true. You'd have the penthouse. This is the thing.
I know.
This
is the junior penthouse. It's yeah. very sad.
Well, it's, you know, it's still got the matrixy view, and you can see the Harbour Bridge.
This does have a matrixy view.
This is what we
like.
Do you
think the guy aiming at us with the scope across the street, are you worried about him?
Mr. Anderson.
In that empty building?
Yeah, that's right. This whole
By the way, that building is empty. Vacant. It reminded me of the Matrix.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Especially now because the sun has dropped.
What is that? Like, it's like, is that a pile of blankets? Or it might be insulation. What is that?
I think it's insulation. Or yeah. is it dead bodies? I mean, you know, you can never be too careful. This is the thing. Or perhaps,
fair point.
You know, it's, I don't know.
Anyway, it reminds me a little, you ever see Boiler Room?
Yes.
Reminds me of that. Each floor there reminds me of that floor they move into when it's just got like phones one after another on the concrete floor.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. Yeah, empty office space. I think, you know, we should move in there. That's much bigger than this room, I should say. But
fair point. Where's
the
view?
For the listeners at home, we're sitting opposite a giant empty office building, which may get filled up. But in the meantime, sure. they're building another one in front of it. So that's the main thing.
Well, the one in front of it's going to block the fact that this one's empty, so nobody will know.
This is also very very handy. Oh,
all right.
But in the business of walking backwards, I could give you all sorts of other bits and pieces, but I think we're probably, I don't know. How long do you want to keep going?
I think we've about done
forever. Well, you know, I could tell you my, one of my earlier mentors, the first job I ever focus pulled on, Steve Winden was the DP.
Ah, okay.
Now,
I don't know Steve Winden, of course, but I know the name.
Yeah. Now shoots Fast and Furious, amongst other things. One of the camera assistants who just started shooting was his now operator, Mark Spicer. Also did a lot of
Steadicam in his time. Oh, yeah.
Most uncomfortable person. Hi, Mark. How are you? Most uncomfortable looking Steadicam operator I've ever seen. You know, just
what do you mean? Kind of,
some people have grace and everything just looks flowy.
Like a huncher?
Yeah, kind of, you know, staggering and hunching and all that stuff. But, you know, he'll love hearing that. He doesn't do Steadicam anymore. And, you know, various other peeps. I did a TV show, a youth show. The other two cameramen, it's just like a, you know, current affairs, but for youth. The other two cameramen was a guy called David Knight, who I learnt a bunch of my Steadicam from. He was the fastest Steadicam operator I've ever seen. And was
what do you mean by, you mean he could run the fastest?
Or? Well, no, in terms of just his ability to move the rig around, go high mode, low mode, watch this, okay, we're done. You know, on a BL, you know, not on a not a digital camera, just like, yep, and there we are. So Dave was one of the cameramen. The other cameraman was Danny Ruhlman, who shot a couple of little films like The Knowing, you know, things like that. So I'm still catching up to those two. But apart from that, you know, what could go wrong? It's various other mentors in the Steadicam business who've seen me do things and helped out along the way. I got to know Chris Fawcett quite well at my workshop. I ended up, you know, advising him on mountain bikes. And he's like, that was the best advice anyone gave me. This was great. So, needless to say, he's a great guy. And needless to say, I'm an Exovest fan.
Are you?
Because he was just developing it. It had just been launched, I think, 2010, when I did my workshop. And love it. You know, apart from the fact, Chris, if you're listening, apart from the fact that if you ever sit down in it, it pokes, the two rails poke holes in your T-shirt. It's great. It kind of, so I've got all these T-shirts with like they've been eaten by moths around your around the bottom.
Huh. Oh, at the bottom.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I see.
Design flaw. I just like to, you know, point out these salient details. I mean, who cares what it feels like? But, you know, yeah, it's ruining t-shirts around the world. And I was going to say, I've heard, you know, a couple of conversations about people and their various interests in the vault. My favorite thing, I've tried the wave, tried the vault. I love the vault. And what I like, one of the things I like most about it that people kind of didn't really pass on to me as a thing was you can put anything anywhere on the rig then because you're in neutral balance. You want to put more gack on top of the camera? Sure, I'll just take some weight off here or put it more on there. Mm-hmm. Because you end up neutral, so who cares? You know, back to the camera 3 feet long for more pan inertia, great. Mm-hmm. You know, the vault will take all that into account. So that's been a huge thing for me. And in the fast-paced world of Australian TV drama, that's mm-hmm. been a real, you know, everyone wants everything yesterday. It's great. Low mode, sure. Extend the post, rebalance, off we go. Done. Yeah.
Nice.
So that's, you know, I think 2.5 hours of politics and about 10 minutes of Steadicam is a good ratio, I think.
We didn't talk that much politics.
No, that's true. Good fun, though. I like all that stuff.
Oh, yeah, well. Let's go to the bar and do it a little more.
Oh, we should. I think we should.
Okay, good. Thanks for coming on, man. I appreciate it.
Thank you so
Thanks
much.
Thanks for the hospitality.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's as I say, it plays right into my need for self-righteousness and validation to finally talk to someone about, you know, well, I love Steadicam and politics.
Well, I hope you feel like you got that here.
I did.
Okay, good.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks to Andrew for putting up with me and for being a great sport and a fun guy to chat with. And thanks to Walter Clausen for all of their support. If you want to hear the Best Day, Worst Day segment with Andrew, go to patreon.com/walkingbackwards and sign up. Thanks for listening. See you next time.